We're learning about beefalo here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Glad you could be here. So this is the interbreeding of American bison with domesticated cattle, and we'll dig into this, but the gene mix is very specific. Beefalo are bred to include more cattle traits than bison. Join in on taste, on the cuts, the herds, comparisons to beef, 800-642-1234. Leo Muir is president of the American Beefalo Association, owns Rock and Camel Beefalo Ranch in Conroe, Texas. Leo, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Welcome. Good morning.
Good morning. And Keith Croft is here as well, Michigan farmer with more than 45 years of experience raising beefalo. And he and his wife run the Croft Beefalo Farm north of Grand Rapids. Keith, welcome to you.
Good morning. Thank you for having us.
Good morning. Well, Keith, let's start out with a description. Can you describe what beefalo look like?
Well, most beefalo are going to look similar to regular cattle. I mean, and a good experienced person can maybe pick out a few of the bison traits. But we're trying to make an animal that's better in meat quality than what we have in regular beef and with the bison there. And they're going to look a lot like the beefalo.
Well, beefalo also, they don't have that hump on their shoulders. Is that right? You know, for, like the way bison do.
That is correct. Some of them will show a little bit of the bison phenotype, the bison traits, but most of them are going to look just pretty close to regular cattle.
Are beefalo aggressive? What is their temperament like?
Well, the temperament for what I've had, and you gotta just like with any breed, eliminate a few of them that have a bad temperament. But I've taken my grandsons when they were little, set them on the back of a bull that was over 2,000 pounds, and walk around talking with them just sitting there. We go in around them, and most of the time they'll come right up. I have a little trailer. We take kids out there to see them, and most of the time they come right up to the trailer and let them pet them.
Oh, wow. Leo, let's talk about the breeding. Very specific here, 37.5% bison genes. Explain the mix here of cattle with bison.
So to get to that 37.5, it's a three-generation cross. You can get to it multiple different ways, but the basics is that you cross a bison with a domestic animal, which gives you a 50-50. And then at that stage, the females are pretty much always fertile, but the males are not. And so you cross your females back to a bison, and that gives you a 75% bison, 25% domestic. You take that animal and you breed it back to a domestic bull, and that gives you your 37.5. And the goal there was to get as much bison in me mixed with the domestic animal, up to a point where we had bulls that were fertile. And we found that the 37.5 was where we had more bulls that were fertile. And so that's kind of what the original people that bred beefalo went with and made that the full blood.
Why is it? Sense. Yeah. Why is that most males are not fertile?
It's just the... I don't fully understand that, I'll be honest. But that's where we found that we had bulls, or you know, where we were able to come up with a breeding bull. Mm-hmm. You know, so therefore we could intermix and be able to stabilize the breed.
I see. Leo Muir there, Leo, president of the American Beefalo Association, based down in Texas. And Keith Croft here, farmer in Michigan with more than four decades of experience raising and breeding beefalo. Taking your questions about this bison cattle hybrid, 800-642-1234, email ideas@wpr.org. So Keith, you know, what is the purpose of Beefalo? Why do you want to do this crossbreed?
Well, you have a hardier animal. The animal will have, and I've never been able to count it, but like they say, five times as much hair per square inch as what your domestic cattle. They'll stand out in the cold and snow and everything, and they stay nice and toasty warm, where regular cattle, a lot of them would be humped up shivering. Also, the meat qualities is one of the main reasons that we cross, is to get a better quality meat.
What can you tell us more about that meat and why it is a higher quality?
Well, I don't know exactly what it does scientifically, but somehow the good Lord's put it in the cross that it just makes a better meat. Your protein is just a little bit higher than regular beef. Calories are lower. And let's see, the cholesterol on beefalo is down with your skinless chicken, fish, and turkey. So different doctors and stuff have said that go ahead and they could eat beefalo where they preferred them not to eat regular beef. Dr. Thad Jackson up in northern part of the state there, he got in it. He had his heart doctors and everything look at all the information, and they all come through with flying colors for the beefalo.
Well, I wonder, Leo, what does beefalo taste like? How would you describe it?
It's hard to be truthful, if you put a beefalo steak next to a regular beef steak, you're not going to tell that much difference.
Okay.
What you do notice is in how it's cooked. Beefalo does have less marbling than a regular, you know, say an Angus steak. And so you don't have the marbling, and so therefore you don't cook it. You're not going to cook it as long as you would a typical beef steak.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you're not going to have the fat when you brown your hamburger for, you know, say spaghetti or anything of that nature. There's not going to be anything to pour off. The hamburgers don't shrink in size. They maintain, you know, whatever size patty you make, they're going to maintain that. It's just an overall healthier, better meat.
Well, I really want to ask both of you a little bit about your own backstories with beefalo. You know, Keith, you first. What got you into raising beefalo?
Well, my father-in-law had a lot of cholesterol and heart problems. And plus, some people say I'm a half bubble off center, and I want to have something a little bit different from what the average farmer's got. And it ended up with my father-in-law. He ended up over at Mayo Clinic. The clinic itself is not endorsing without many, many, many tests. But the doctors there told my father-in-law that he could eat that along with the venison and moose, elk, that kind of stuff. And so that was one of the reasons that we got into beefalo, is because of him and his health problems.
And that was in the 70s.
Yes.
So you've had quite some time with beefalo, and to kind of, I would imagine you've learned a few tips and tricks along the way.
Yeah. I found that the best way to take, we pasture on both sides of a road here, and a lot of times I used to take and try to push them across, and we had a heck of a time getting them crossed. When I ended up with just coaxing them, and now they're trained, and I can have 30-some cows with their calves across the road in a matter of 2 minutes. I also read an article many, many years ago in Mother Earth News magazine, and that really impressed me. About the beefalo, and I never believed I'd meet the people that put the article in, but I have since then sat in their kitchen drinking coffee with them, and that was a real, real blessing.
Well, Leo, how about you? How did you get into beefalo farming?
my dad back in the 70s, late 70s, actually went out to Bud Basolo's ranch and saw his operation. Bud Basolo was one of the entrepreneurs that kind of made Beefalo, or kind of got Beefalo off the ground and got it going. But anyway, my dad went out there and he was impressed with what he saw, and he saw the nutritional value of Beefalo as being something that he felt the American people would like. And so we started raising Beefalo. And then Beefalo kind of died off in the 80s for whatever reason. I don't fully understand. I wasn't that old then. but after that, I joined the military and about halfway through my military career, my dad asked, "Hey, what do you want to, you're raising quite a few cattle. Which way do you want to go?" And I said, "Well, I want to go back to the Beefalo. I really liked what I saw when you were raising it." And so that's when I got back into Beefalo. So I got back in around 2004 and have tried to stay active in Beefalo since then. But the main focus is the nutritional value along with the sustainability. As Keith mentioned, Beefalo do really well up in the cold weather.
Mm-hmm.
But in the same regards, down here in Texas, where we're currently going through a drought, Beefalo are able to breed. They have more hair per square inch, but they also they're able to sweat, whereas other cattle don't. And so I find that my Beefalo are out there grazing when your typical domestic cow is up under the shade and waiting till it's afternoon, or waiting and grazing at night.
I see.
You know, they do go out and get it. They go out and eat and sustain. And so the Beefalo is able to handle both the heat and the cold weather.
Leo Muir, a Beefalo rancher in Texas, leads the trade group for this crossbreed of cattle and bison. Keith Croft is here, Beefalo farmer in Michigan. Join in on your questions about Beefalo, 800-642-1234. We'll pick this up in a moment. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. We're exploring Beefalo on the Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The publication for Food Industry News, the Food Institute, they popped the question last week in their headline, "Is Beefalo the next big thing in meat?" So we're probing that very question with longtime Beefalo farmers who are fielding your questions about the hybrid of bison and bovine. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. We have Michigan Beefalo farmer Keith Croft and Texas rancher Leo Muir, head of the Trade Association, and they stay with us. So, Keith, we heard from Michael in Madison, called and couldn't stay with us. And Michael is wondering, what are the resource costs to house, to breed, to maintain Beefalo compared to traditional beef cows or domesticated cattle? Can you answer that?
Yes, I can. Beefalo will stay in anything that regular cattle will be in. You got to have feed, water, and have them content, just like with every breed of cattle. Beefalo also browse a little bit along with their grazing. They're more of a non-selective grazer. And my fences aren't the greatest, and as long as they're happy, they stay where they belong.
Leo, anything coming up for you there on comparing costs of raising Beefalo versus traditional domesticated cattle?
I don't see any difference in the cost between raising domestic or raising Beefalo. If anything, I think it's a little bit cheaper. Beefalo will go out there and graze where most domestic cattle won't. And so, you know, they'll eat. I've seen one of my beefalo heifers were eating pine needles, even though there was plenty of grass out there. So, you know, beefalo will eat some weird roughage where, like I said, other domestics won't.
That was just their appetizer, apparently, or something.
Yeah, exactly.
A little hors d'oeuvre there. You know, Leo, since you're the head of the trade association, if beefalo, if it's been around since the 70s, why is it still a niche meat? Why isn't it in the meat section of the grocery stores? What's holding beefalo back?
It's a disagreement between people. So, I mean, beefalo has been a challenge ever since it was started. So, I mean, people back in the 1800s, Charles Goodnight, and other breeders back in the 1800s saw the possibility of being able to cross domestic cattle with bison and saw it as a better way or saw that the animal would be able to handle different temperatures and be able to do be more of an aggressive animal. The thing is just like a lot of things, the difference of opinions between breeders has, rather than getting breeders to work together, it has, they've worked against each other more so.
Hmm.
And so that as the president, one of my focuses is to get the breeders together, to get them to agree, to disagree, and to get them to focus on what's really important, and that is getting our meat out there to the public where it belongs.
Well, let's take a call now. Nate is joining us from Cascade, Iowa. Nate, hi. What's on your mind about beefalo?
Yeah, I had a couple different questions. I guess the first question is, what is the calving ease compared to regular domestic cattle?
Okay, so calving versus regular domestic cattle. Keith, can you field that?
Yes, I can. I find that beefalo are much better than regular cattle on calving. You're going to have a smaller calf. Bison have small calves. And when we were weighing all of our calves, we run 65 to 75, once in a while an 80-pound calf. But most of the time, it was like a 65 to a 70-pound calf is what we get, which is easy for a young cow to have without having difficulties.
When do they start breeding?
When do they stop breeding?
Oh, start. How old?
Oh, you've got beefalo that go up. I've had one that was like 22 years old.
Oh, okay.
We got like 18 calves out of her. And, you know, they got a longer lifespan than regular cattle due to the bison, because bison have been known to live 40 years old, and you don't find cattle that will do that.
Nate, does that answer your question?
Yeah. I guess another question is, and compare, I'm assuming you're doing all grass-fed operation, or do you do grain as well?
I use all grass-fed, basically. I used to have silage, and I just don't have the land base for the silage anymore. But just they're grass-fed. I do have a chance of getting the vegetables at a local area farmer, and I feed them some vegetables like your parsnips and carrots and a few of that sort of thing. But basically, mine are grass-fed.
Leo, how about you, grass versus grain?
As far as my beef animals or my feeder steers, they're strictly grass-fed. I do my replacement heifers. I'll supplement them a little bit, you know, 3 to 4 pounds a day a growing mix or grower type mix of feed, but for the most part, I want my heifers to really grow off the grass and be able to maintain and not require feed on a regular basis.
Well, Leo and Keith, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Leo.
Yes, I really appreciate the interest in reaching out to us.
Sure. Leo Meir, president of the American Beefalo Association, raising them in Conroe, Texas. And Keith Croft there, a beefalo farmer in Newaygo, Michigan. Ahead this hour, we talk about the Wisconsin rollout of COVID vaccine for children under 5 years old with a pediatrician from Children's Wisconsin. Join in with your questions on COVID shots for the youngest age group, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. News update and a story from Wisconsin Life are next here on the Ideas Network. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Maureen McCollum with a new poem from a Milwaukee writer.
The road to forgiveness is long and bumpy, but what if forgiveness isn't an option? Writer Deshaun McKinney of Milwaukee is exploring this in his new collection of poetry, Father Forgive Me. He shares one poem from that book on forgiveness.
Somewhere you read forgiveness and dreamt about killing a man. You hear forgiveness unburdens and check that the knife is still by your pillow. Sometimes you feel sorry and remember your father's words, how you suck in your stomach in mirrorless rooms and take pride in no one believing you were ever that big in your resurrection. You tell yourself that you are a man now, but every night write a hymn for the boy who tried to scrub his stretch marks into oblivion. You think of what he would have been if worshipped, if celebrated instead of sacrifice, wonder what to set upon an altar for sensitive black boys. Regret the threat of the knife, but polish the metal, reset it anyway, having learned young that sensitive black boys were fighters of the world's accord. Learned young that you would have to unlearn your tears, but learn how to store them for one day. You remind yourself that it's never too late to get an education. Hope one day is less tomorrows away when you awake. Next to the blade will be a letter addressed to black women, handwritten. For fixing you plates of collard greens and pig's feet as large as the table, calling you baby and weighing your report cards heavier than the digits on any bathroom, hallway, living room scale, you tell yourself you are a man now. That you say I love you to the homies without context and hope it sounds as soft as you believe love needs to be. On the most tender nights, you scroll through memories of smiles, hugs, travels, and sex to preempt the dreams. You wake to the stillness of 4 a.m., having read about forgiveness. Somewhere, and forgive yourself for having trouble finding it.
That's writer Deshaun McKinney reading his poem on forgiveness. He explains the inspiration behind that piece.
This poem was really coming from a space of just thinking about the idea of forgiveness. You know, so often when we experience some kind of hardship or trauma or betrayal or whatever it is, we're often told that forgiveness is the path to move forward. And like, it's almost as if that's what you have to do or you're supposed to do. And that's the only way to heal from something. I think of it as an interesting idea of, well, it's never that simple. And I think we so often force people into it that idea of me having to forgive can also be harmful in some ways. And I'm of the mind that that's not necessarily the only way to move forward. So for me, when I was writing this poem, I really wanted to just kind of grapple with the complexity. What does it look like when you hear these things, I should forgive, or I read about forgiveness as the poem says, and I'm actually having trouble getting to that point of forgiveness? And just kind of what does that look like?
McKinney's poem is part of a greater collection of his work called Father Forgive Me.
The book is called Father Forgive Me, and it's really a book that grapples with and nuances generational traumas. And it's really figuring out how does it affect you. How does it follow you through your life? I wanted to present different time periods and different scenarios of how it impacts you, and then wants to grapple with that idea of forgiveness, and which really pairs down to what do you do with these experiences and this trauma, and how do you move forward? And so it's, these poems all have that through line of that journey of You experience this thing that is very impactful on your life, and you're carrying this weight. And then how do you move through the world, and where do you go next? And really about how do you live with things that have been imposed upon you? I think that's kind of what I hope to get across with this book.
Writer Deshaun McKinney is from Milwaukee. He recently released a new collection of poetry called Father Forgive Me through Black Sunflowers Poetry Press. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook. I'm Maureen McCollum.
Now, COVID vaccines for children under 5 started rolling out this week. We get at your questions here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. State Health Department Secretary Designee Karen Timberlake said Tuesday nearly 300,000 additional Wisconsin children are eligible to get vaccinated. Eliza Wills, a Madison parent of a 4-year-old, told WPR it was hard to find a pharmacy ready for a rollout.
This isn't our first rodeo. They've had practice and opportunities to put a proactive plan in place, but there were very few providers that did. And I think that has been incredibly frustrating.
Join in with your questions on getting the littlest ones vaccinated, 800-642-1234. Dr. Smriti Kari is a pediatrician and chief mental and behavioral health officer for Children's Wisconsin. Dr. Kari, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Good morning. Well, the wait is over. What should parents know about the COVID vaccine for our littlest ones, kids under 5?
Yeah, this is, from a pediatrician's point of view, I would say a very exciting time. I think the parents have been waiting a long time to have their youngest ones well protected against COVID-19, and this is our opportunity. I think it's important to recognize that it's been about 18 months since vaccines became available for the adults, and it does tell you that there's been a lot of thought put into trying to find the vaccines that were the safest and most effective for children. So we're happy to say that both Moderna and Pfizer-BioNTech have been approved now for all ages, 6 months and up. The Moderna approval through the Center for Disease Control actually just happened yesterday, so that was good news. You know, listening to the parent who talked about the frustration, I think it's important to know that even after approvals happen, there is a period of planning time. We've been working on being ready for this for months, but the vaccines actually have to be delivered to all of the sites. And because the doses of the vaccine are a little bit different from the ones that we had for the adults, it's not like the stock's available. We actually have to build that into our system so that we can safely deliver the correct vaccine to the right patient and make sure that it's okay. But I do believe that most people are starting to vaccinate, in this last couple of days. And by next week, it should be readily available elsewhere as well.
Can you explain a little bit more there? Because I think I understand that the Moderna is a 2-dose series, Pfizer is 3-dose series.
Correct. So there's a bit of a difference between the two vaccines. The Pfizer is a smaller dose of the vaccine compared to what the adults get, and it is a 3-dose series. So it's the first dose, 3 weeks after the first dose is the second dose, and about 8 weeks after the second dose, you can get the third dose. What we do know about the Pfizer vaccine is that they use a smaller amount of the vaccine, and so the side effects are presumed to be milder with Pfizer. But we do also know that the immunity doesn't start until 7 days after that third dose, so it takes a little bit longer to become immune with Pfizer. With Moderna, it's 2 doses, and they use a slightly higher amount of vaccine in there. So you are protected. The 2 doses are 1 month apart, and you are protected fairly soon after you get the second dose. So the benefit to the Moderna is that you get your protection sooner. The drawback is that you might actually have a few more side effects, although all across the board in the trials, the side effects were fairly mild. And so it's not expected to be a huge drawback. It's just one of the things around Moderna vaccine that we have read so far.
So as you see healthcare providers stocking up, getting their stocks ready to administer the series, where would you suggest that parents take their young children to get vaccinated? Where should they go?
Yeah, that's a great question. And, you know, I think that this is one of the times when actually going to your healthcare provider might be a better option. Within the state of Wisconsin, not all pharmacies and retail pharmacies will be carrying the vaccine. So it is important to call ahead to find out if they can or not. There are certain restrictions on pharmacists vaccinating children less than 3 years of age. There is a requirement for a prescription to be available from a healthcare provider for them to be able to do the vaccine. So with that in mind, the options are a little bit more restricted with this younger age group. So calling your healthcare provider is the first place. One of the other really good options we have in our state is the vaccines.gov site that will actually tell you where vaccines are available and allow you to schedule. The other option you have is calling 211, which can also direct you to vaccine locations that have the vaccine available.
Dr. Khari, you know, millions of children and teens have been vaccinated so far, but still uptake is slow, lagging, boosting, especially those numbers not so great as well. What would you tell parents and caregivers who are unsure of getting the COVID vaccine for their youngest children?
Absolutely. I think most parents care deeply about knowing that the vaccine is safe. And I think it's easy enough to say today, with millions and millions of doses being given across the world, that we do know that the vaccines are safe. Most of the side effects are fairly minimal, more local pain at the site, maybe some fever and achiness for a day or so. There is some concern because in the older teens, we have seen some cases of myocarditis, but even that now has been evaluated deeply. And we know that those are usually self-resolved and definitely much, much less of a risk of having that compared to the risk of myocarditis from COVID-19 disease. So from a safety point of view, I think we feel very comfortable. I think one of the things that people, the word out is that COVID-19 is not as dangerous for children, but I would suggest otherwise. I mean, you know, when we look at the data, we know that a lot of children have had the disease. We also know that a lot of children have had symptoms of long COVID, which is something that really can last months to years, and it's a combination of things: fatigue, brain fog. A lot of children have had trouble with taste and smell, which has impacted their ability to really eat, and so we've had an increase in eating disorders. We also know that the pandemic has been significantly impacting our children's emotional and mental health, and that is a pandemic, a public health crisis in itself now. And so vaccines are one of the most trusted, most effective ways to really be able to get a control on this disease and be able to get our children back to the things they want to be doing: going to school, being with their friends, doing activities that they enjoy, keeping their caregivers safe. And for all of those reasons, it's so important for us to think about vaccines as one of the ways to be able to protect our community.
Pediatrician Smriti Khari of Children's Wisconsin stays with us. Join in on whether your child has had COVID previously, what they've experienced, what you want to find out about the Moderna and Pfizer COVID vaccines for children under 5. Join in 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Dr. Khari on The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're talking about the rollout of COVID vaccines for children under five with the pediatrician. The state health department said in a statement this week that both Pfizer and Moderna vaccines continue to arrive in Wisconsin and are being distributed across our state. Join in with your questions about vaccinating the youngest age group, 800-642-1234. Dr. Smriti Kari of Children's Wisconsin with us for 9 more minutes. Let's bring in Nancy in Milwaukee. Nancy, good morning. What is your question for the doctor?
My question is, I've always been puzzled about why it has been so absolutely critical to find the exact dose for young children when a pregnant woman was receiving the adult dose and her developing fetus was receiving all of the ramifications of that adult dose. And I just am very puzzled by this, that children, as I said, need an absolutely critical size dose for their age and their height and their weight, perhaps, and yet this fetus was subject to the full adult dose the mother was getting because it was passing through her placenta into the developing organs of the baby.
Nancy, thank you for that question. Dr. Kari.
Yeah, that's a really interesting question. So first of all, when we are vaccinating a pregnant woman, we are actually helping prime her immune system to be able to fight the disease. And so really what we're measuring is the mother's immune system and the response that the mother's immune system has to the vaccine. When we're vaccinating children, we're depending on their immune system. And so children are not little adults. They do actually have different immune responses. And so the ability to find a safe dose for children that minimizes the side effects, but actually gives us enough efficacy of the vaccine, that's really what we're looking for. And so, and children come in different sizes. So it did take a little bit longer to find a dose that would work for all children. And so that's really sort of the difference between the two scenarios.
And this dose is for children who are at least 6 months of age. Is that right?
Correct. 6 months to 5 years of age for the Moderna vaccine and 6 months to 4 years of age for the Pfizer vaccine. The Pfizer vaccine was already approved for 5 years to 18 years of age. And so there's just that nuanced difference between the two.
If your baby or your toddler has recently had COVID, and we've really seen child cases are far higher than they were a year ago. That's from the American Academy of Pediatrics last week. But if your baby has had COVID recently, when should they get their vaccine?
Yes. So the Omicron variant, the more recent variant that we had, was definitely one that we saw more in children. The rate was almost 5 times as high as the previous variant. And so we know that even if you've had natural disease with COVID-19, the vaccine is only going to help boost your immunity. And really, as long as you are not ill at the time of vaccination, you're okay to get the vaccine anytime after you're better from the disease.
Okay. So you were saying earlier about some kids who do get very sick. And earlier in the pandemic, we heard of Miss C, the multisystem inflammatory syndrome in children. Has the physician community made strides in understanding the syndrome better? What are you seeing there?
Yeah, so we do know that that is probably one of the biggest risks that we have with children, the multisystem inflammatory syndrome, and it's being studied very extensively. And, you know, as we know, and we read all the time from news articles, one of the unpredictable things about the COVID-19 illness is how it impacts different parts of the body. The lungs more commonly known, but the blood vessels and the sort of tendency to clot in the immune system that seems to go a bit out of control, all of those things are sort of presumed to be the basis of why children have had the MIS-C. So while we don't know conclusively exactly why that's happening, it is an area of deep research, and hopefully we'll have some more answers soon.
We're talking with pediatrician Smriti Kari with Children's Wisconsin, talking about the COVID vaccines approved for the youngest children, youngest age group. Taking your questions about it, 800-642-1234. So I'm wondering as well, you know, are there, in addition to the vaccines and children, you know, being in summer camps and in other gatherings over the summer, what would you suggest to parents on how, what else they can do to protect their kids who are under five?
So we say often that vaccines are one of the tools, probably one of the most effective tools we have to mitigate this illness. And all of those other wonderful things that we learned in these last 2 years of washing your hands, wearing masks, social distancing, all of those are still things that are very effective in decreasing the incidence. But I think one of the things that we've learned the most in these last 2 years is really staying home when we're sick. So I think for parents, I would say, please watch your children. You know, if they're not feeling well, make sure that they are not around other kids. And if you are in a public setting and you notice somebody else is ill there, you might want to walk away, because those are the sort of really good habits that we've learned to decrease infectious disease that I would like for us to continue to keep on board as we go forward, even if the vaccines are helping us bring the COVID-19 disease down.
And we only have a few seconds left, but once the parent or caregiver has finished the series for their young child, when are they most protected after they finished all two or three of the series?
Sure. With the Moderna vaccine, which is a two-dose series, you are protected after the second dose, so okay. 2 weeks after the second dose. And with the Pfizer vaccine, it's a week after your third dose, which is given, 3 weeks between the first and second dose and 8 weeks between the second and third dose. That's when you're most protected.
Dr. Kari, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Dr. Smriti Kari, a pediatrician and chief mental and behavioral health officer for Children's Wisconsin. For disclosure, Children's Wisconsin is a business sponsor of Wisconsin Public Radio. Just ahead, we visit Lake Halley in Chippewa County with the author of a new book exploring life near Wisconsin waterways. Sound familiar to your upbringing? Maybe you grew up near a lake. Let's talk about it. 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.